And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis. The late Patty Fink has the day off because she got married yesterday. She and Aaron tied the knot and they are on their honeymoon or something.
Or something.
She's off. It was a lovely event yesterday. It was at the Roundup. Glenn Maxey officiated, former state rep, and it was a lot of fun. So they're hitched after 15 years, I believe. Friday was their 15th anniversary.
Yeah,
yeah. Our guests today are from Jonathan's Place, and we're going to explain what Jonathan's Place is. But Jennifer Maddox is the Assistant Director of Foster Care and Adoption, and Brian Moschler and, did I say that right?
Yes, you
and
did.
And Cisco Varela are a married couple. They have three adopted children, and they've got them through Jonathan's Place. Welcome, all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So let's start. What is Jonathan's Place?
Jonathan's Place, we have five different programs. We have an emergency shelter on site. We have a girls' treatment program on site. They are beginning a transitional living program. So those would be girls 18 to 22.
I just want to jump in. For kids who are removed from their homes.
From foster, yes, children in foster care.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is just beginning. We also operate Safe Place, which is in conjunction with Quick Trip for children who can't go home for the moment. And then our foster care and adoption program, of which I am a part.
Good.
Okay, so just a couple of little things. How long is a kid usually at Jonathan's Place?
In the shelter, they can be there up to 90 days. It is intended to be a temporary placement. From the shelter, they may be able to return to some family members, whether that's parents or not, or they may go to a foster home.
I was going to say, you're talking about what Jonathan's Place is. Jonathan's Place is actually named after somebody.
Yes.
So there is a Jonathan.
There is a Jonathan. He was eventually adopted and is now Tyler, but Lisa Matthews is the founder mm-hmm. of Jonathan's Place, and he was her first foster placement. Huh. She began as a foster parent and had an infant come to her home and straight from the hospital. He didn't have a name, so they called him Jonathan.
Oh.
So we are Jonathan's Place.
So that's how it started. Nice.
Okay, so why are you on our show? First of all, Jonathan's Place was honored this weekend by the Turtle Creek Corral that honored six community organizations.
Yes, we're very
and
grateful for
some
that.
Some of the community organizations were like Resource Center and Cathedral of Hope, just real obvious what their connection is. Jonathan's Place had it's an odder connection because they're not a gay organization, mm-mm. but what you are is the first foster and adoption agency in Texas that was recognized by Human Rights Campaign as
for their all families seal
all,
of recognition.
All children, all families.
Yes, right.
Yes, and we were the first child placing agency in Texas. It was very important to us to be the first agency in Texas because we have been doing this work for years, and we're proud of it. And so to receive that recognition meant a lot to us.
Well, awesome. And you've done a good job with it, too, because it isn't just since marriage equality. It's been all along. You're about 25 years old, right?
Right. The foster care and adoption program began in 2007. So it's newer. Jonathan's Place as an agency is celebrating its 25th year. Just this year.
But as you've been doing foster placements all along, you've been looking for – and I want to say you're not looking for gay and lesbian and transgender and bi families to put the kids in. You're looking for...
We are looking for the best parents for these children. We do not make preconceived notions of who those best parents are. We're judging everyone from the beginning on the equal playing field.
Right. I mean, if you just take this room, that side of the table would be great. This side of the table, it's like not so much, right?
That's so, the first true thing you've said all day.
Yeah, I've kind of been picking on Lauren as we've been talking in the other room. Let's just talk. Let's go to Brian and Cisco. What led you to want to be parents in the first place?
We've always wanted to be parents. It's something that we've always talked about since the day we met.
14, 15 years ago, something like that. And once I finished school, we decided that it was time. So we started looking at different options, and we knew a gay couple who had gone through Jonathan's Place and was just placed with their foster kid. So we sat down and talked to him for a couple of hours, and we knew immediately that was the direction we needed to go.
Right. Well, when we first were talking about kids, we didn't know that this was an option or that it was a possibility within the state of Texas to actually go through the CPS foster care system. And so we were happily surprised when a friend actually recommended that we go look up this Jonathan's Place and just kind of find out a little bit of information. And once we made contact, then we started to kind of understand a little bit more of what we were getting into.
And we'll get to that more specifically in a little bit about what you could do in Texas versus what you can do in Texas now. But let's clarify, what's the difference between, for those who don't know, fostering a child and adopting? And do you have to do one to do the other?
You don't have to you can be a foster only. You could be an adopt only parent. At Jonathan's Place, our families do foster to adopt. We dual license all of our homes, which means from the outset, all of our homes are licensed to foster and to adopt, so there are no initial steps. If you're moving toward adoption, there's no extra steps. You are already licensed to adopt. But we do ask our parents to foster to adopt. And that means a child comes into your home as a foster placement. During that time, parents have 12 to 18 months, to work their services. If that doesn't happen, if no other appropriate family members are located, then as the foster parents, you are typically the first option to adopt that child. So that is the foster to adopt process. Comes in as a foster placement, turns into an adoption.
And you told us before the show, but what's the main reason that kids are taken out of their parents' homes?
They're removed for abuse or neglect, and the majority of cases, 75% of the children are removed due to neglect.
And by neglect, you mean what?
It could be physical neglect, neglectful supervision, medical neglect. Most neglect cases involve drug usage.
Gotcha. And were you guys totally aware of the difference between the foster and adoption and prepare for what possibly could happen with fostering, meaning a child could be removed from you?
So we were prepared. We went through the trainings. We talked through the various scenarios. But I would say you're not really prepared until you actually kind of go through the process.
Right.
Because there's a lot of legal steps. There's a lot of organizations that are involved so once a child's placed in your home, of things that have to occur, timing of court dates, what the court dates mean, CPS's expectations. So one of the things that that we heard back from some of the people that we worked with, that one of the reasons they kind of liked working with us was we tended to kind of understand or at least respect the boundaries. Because typically when you get a child that's removed and placed in your home, the first thing they don't want to hear is, I want this child and I want him to stay in my home and when can I adopt? Because there is a process and they really are looking at the main goal is to get return the child to the parents.
Right.
I would like to say that my expectation prior to all the training and really getting into Jonathan's Place and this process was that I felt like I understood the difference between foster care and adoption. Mm-hmm. Because I've actually known kids that were in foster care and, you know, through high school. And so I think I had some expectation when I walked in the door knowing that foster care was being a temporary safe place at that moment. But while the family still worked out what they needed to work out. So it could be a temporary thing. So just a different take on it. That was my expectation.
Now let's just talk about your family. You've adopted three children.
Three cute little boys. Oh my God. I wish we had a camera here.
Two of them are 3 years old and one is
four.
Right. You've had them for 2 years now?
Some, yes. Others longer.
And your process of going through this, you ended up it was seven different children who went through your house?
Right, right. We've had five placements, seven kids, and three of them we've ended up adopting.
And the whole process from deciding that you were going to start till the time the adoption actually went through was about how long?
Oh, a couple years at least. 3 years?
You were licensed 2 years, weren't you, by the time you adopted?
Right, but 9 months. Like, so then there was 9 months of training.
Yes.
And then 2 years worth of foster care before the
first
one. That's
a very long pregnancy.
Very long, very long.
But it was worth it.
It was absolutely worth it. Yeah, yeah. It was, but you know, what's funny is because everybody's walk is different. Everybody's
sure.
walk yeah. is so different than our own. So we had friends that had their very first placement, which is very, 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 very rare, mm-hmm. where they were able to adopt. Just so happens that that very, very, very rare moment happened for like six different friends of ours.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we were like, what is going on with us? Why is this not working?
Wow.
But our placements were also very long. You know, they only one of them was short term, which was about 6 weeks. The rest of them were over a year.
But tell what happened with one of yours that you had to go to court and she was just taken from your home.
Our very first placement was a sibling group, a boy and a girl. And, you know, they were pulled because of the issues with the boy. And 6 months after we had gotten them in our home, couple days before Christmas, we were told, oh, they're going to court tomorrow. And then and by lunchtime, we were told that she's going to be picked up at 4:00. So we were absolutely devastated. We were leaving for Christmas vacation the next morning
with them.
Yeah, we had, you know, all the we were given
her
the permission.
He had her presents.
We had to open up Christmas presents. I mean, like within an hour of picking her up and just rip them open, take some pictures with her riding her new bike. It was heartbreaking.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And then she went home.
Right. Well, it was kind of – the other difficult part of it was trying to explain to her what was going on, but also trying to explain to the brother what was going on and
right.
why he was not going. And so there was a lot of emotions and do we go on our Christmas trip? Do we stay home? What do we do? How do we move forward? And one of the things that we decided was just, you know, you got to keep moving forward. You can't just abandon a trip just because of some a roadblock. And so
– Right, and just that explaining to the kids, you had a couple of hours to do it.
Yes.
How do you do that?
It's difficult, and it's a complicated story. But it's one of the things that that you think about now when you were saying goodbye to the child. One of the things that we had said was we're not going to see you again, and lo and behold, about 3 months later, we ended up seeing her again because she was placed back in our home. One of her first responses was, why did you tell me you'd never see me again?
Mm.
Well, at the time, we never thought we would. So it kind of, you start to watch a little bit of what you say and how
right,
you communicate
right.
because
mm-hmm.
kids
right.
can come and go, and
right.
you really have no control over that.
So how do you go from you have a child for X amount of time fostering, and you know that there's no guarantee that this child could come up for adoption, but then they do. You get the news, hey, this child is up for adoption. Do you want to keep him or her or not? Is it automatic? Yeah, we want to keep him or
so no. Typically around the 6 month mark or so that you can kind of see if the parents are going to get the children back or not, or mm-hmm. if they're going to start talking adoption. And
actually legally, don't they have 6 months to put a plan in place?
They have to put a plan in place within the first 30 days, I think, or something like that.
It's that quick. Okay.
The parent service plan starts immediately.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they have 12 months to work their services. The judge can decide if about 9 or 10 months in, if parents are making some progress or if there could be extenuating circumstances, they can receive a 6-month extension. So that could go to 18 months.
Mm-hmm. Like if they're taking classes or
right.
whatever.
If they're and making it's gonna, some progress, yeah. then mm-hmm. they may give them extra time.
Okay.
Right.
So how do you prepare yourself mentally to do something like that, to just love a kid to death and then have her pulled from your house?
Yeah. It was, it's expectation. You know, we had been through the training through Jonathan's Place so much, and they just hit us over the head that you know, this is foster care, you know, this will happen. You know, be prepared. Think about how, you know, we went through exercises of how we would prepare ourselves for that moment. So we kind of already, it was shocking and it was hard to go through.
But and that is what we ask of them, to love this child as if this child is your own.
Sure.
All the while knowing there are parents out there and the child may return to their parents. Mm-hmm. And we understand that is a huge thing to ask of someone. Mm-hmm. But we ask that because this child needs a safe home. It needs to be taken care of. And you as the adult can handle that pain easier than a child. It's not easy. We know it's not easy, but you are the adult, and so that's what we ask.
Yeah. I can't even imagine how you would explain to them to explain it to the kid, because every situation is different.
Every situation.
And that's why I think I'd be a horrible foster parent. I can't turn away a kitten or a puppy that walks up on my doorstep. If I feed you, you're here to stay.
Yeah,
you
Josh know? Can.
you know,
Josh is the same way, actually.
You know, I think that in some regards we thought the same thing. Like, mm-hmm. I can't do this, or this is too difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had instances where the children were moved, and it's, I can't do this again. Mm-hmm. I can't. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do this to myself again, or to be vulnerable, things of that, like that nature. But, you know, every time that we've opened up our house again and received that next child, we are so grateful that we did do that. That it was worth it more to open ourselves up and to do it again than it was to just kind of close ourselves off. I think that when we look back on it, we're very happy with what happened. Mm-hmm. The situations weren't always the best scenario for necessarily us, but we think the children did end up in the best places.
Right.
We need to take a break. Okay. We're talking to Brian and Cisco. They are adoptive parents now. They are licensed foster parents and did foster, was it 19 times? No, you told me not to mention those terrible people up in Arkansas. You are not like that. But Brian and Cisco have adopted 3 children, and they did it through Jonathan's Place. Jennifer Maddox is the assistant director for foster care and adoption at Jonathan's Place. I'm Dave Taffet here with Lauren Landis. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
This is Janice McCall from TCU, and I listen to Lambda Week on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I am here in the studio with Lauren Landis. Patty is off on her honeymoon because she got married yesterday. She was married by Judge Tina Callahan, who was the first judge to declare the Defense of Marriage Act unconstitutional mm-hmm. when she was trying to divorce a couple here in Texas back in 2011, I believe. And their divorce got challenged by the state and sat in the Supreme Court for 5 years. It's the yep. only divorce in Texas history that took 5 years. Anyway, that's who married Patty and Aaron. We are talking about Jonathan's Place and adopting and fostering, something that I think a lot of people in the LGBT community don't realize not only can they do, but they're welcome to do it. Every time one of these right-wing idiots in Austin tries to pass a law to prevent us from adopting, CPS, we don't even have to push them. CPS is down at the Capitol screaming, who the hell do you think is adopting our kids, especially our special needs kids?
Absolutely.
Jennifer, I want to go to you first. If somebody decides that they'd like to be a foster parent or to do foster to adoption with you,
right,
to be licensed as a foster home, you have to go through a number of steps.
Right.
Now, you're basically holding their hand through the whole process. But what's involved in being a foster home?
The first step is the training. And there are about 40 hours of in-person training that is completed at Jonathan's Place. All of our training is done on the weekend. So the majority
really?
Of our parents work. We have working parents, so we understand that
that's
you don't want
to
come.
Know.
You don't want to come at night after you've worked all day, and you can't mm-hmm. come during the day. So all of our training is on the weekend. And then once you finish your training, we ask our parents to do supervised observation, because We want you to be fully prepared for these children
and
to be
placed. And what does that mean, supervised observation?
It can be, you can go to our shelter on campus, or we have foster homes who have said they can come, and you're just strictly observing. That's what you're doing. You can gives you an opportunity to interact with the children. The shelter, you could spend every day, you know, Saturday and Sunday, all weekend there, and you just get to know them and understand personalities, unique needs, the unique behaviors of children in foster care. And once you have completed your supervised observation and submitted all of your documentation that we need from you, then you will have your home study. And during the training is preparing you for a trauma, to deal with children who have been victims of trauma, but you're also learning about how to get your home ready, because there are minimum standards that we have to meet. And
very, such as?
5-pound fire extinguisher in your kitchen. And if you have a two multi-level home, you have to have a fire extinguisher on every level.
And you got to have a map, exit map.
An evacuation plan is what you have. A disaster and evacuation plan. A fire inspection, a health inspection.
If you have a pool, you've got, you know, a gate that's locked and alarms on the doors.
Medications, how to store medications.
Which is locked. That is the answer. All of your medication in your home must be locked. And some of it must be double locked. If you have weapons in your home, how those have to be locked.
Animals, how you have to have everything with your dogs or cats.
There's lots of rules. Yeah. But what I say during every one of those trainings is there are a lot of rules, but there are reasons for those rules.
Sure.
I mean, and you must remember, these are not our children. Children are in the care of the state
and
of Texas.
And one that we talked about. You can't spank a foster kid.
No, you cannot.
Now, it seems like, you know.
You cannot threaten to spank a foster child.
And we'll talk about it. There's a very good reason why, but you're thinking, well, there might be reasons. These are kids who might be acting out particularly badly, possibly came from a home where they never did get supervision or discipline or whatever. And I'm not advocating spanking kids, but occasionally. But what's the reason that you absolutely cannot?
Well, you have to remember, these children are victims of trauma. They have been abused. They have been neglected. And you do not know what is going to trigger them and what is going to set them back. I mean, you will see them make remarkable progress in your home, most likely. Children are resilient, thankfully. But anything can trigger that. And even a raised voice can cause them to regress. You know, and you know, you may be talking to each other as parents and not arguing, but maybe you're talking louder than you were, or maybe it's an excited conversation that could trigger thoughts of domestic violence in their home.
You can't send a kid away from the table without dinner.
Oh my goodness, no.
Absolutely not.
Because
they probably have had days where they didn't have food. The kids are going to come into your home, and what they're going to want to eat are the chips and the cookies and
fries,
McDonald's, chicken nuggets, because that's what they know.
Okay, so, Brian, what did you do about it when kids just wanted to eat junk food?
We still have to deal with that on a daily basis.
I don't think that's limited to any particular kind of child. That's just kids.
Yeah. Chicken nuggets and fries. Is it?
Well, Ron, in your case, it was you that was saying, no, Gabrielle, we are going to have French fries. I am bringing home pizza for dinner, and you're going to eat it.
Sometimes that's been true.
Well, so, I mean, it's, you know, you think about it, as adults, you don't want to be, you respond better when you're not being yelled at, right? You know, when somebody's trying to reason with you, and that's all you really have to do with these kids. They don't want to deal with being yelled at either.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sending away, you know, we all grew up where you were sent to your room for not, you know, and you don't get dinner, but, you know, when you think about it, you're not giving them the nourishment that they need,
right,
to even, like, function. And so, you know, it's as far as punishment goes, or you can't use those tactics that grandma,
discipline.
So what types of things do you teach a foster parent?
So one of the trainings is called behavior intervention techniques, and you want to, one, your discipline has to be specific to each child, because each child is going to respond differently. Whereas typically parents are inclined to maybe use time out. You need to calm down. You need to go to your room, be alone for 5 minutes. We advocate more time in. The child has to be right next to you, spend the time with you, because these children have spent so much time on their own, in their room, no interaction with adults. So the time in is less traumatizing to them.
Well, one of the things that we kind of learned was that the first 30 days to 45 days can be very difficult for both the foster family as well as the child. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is that you're trying to build that connection. And connection can be done, like, you know, verbally talking, but it's also just comfort. Mm-hmm. and just kind of understanding that if you have a situation arise, you're not going to resort to the yelling, to the hitting, to the different things like that. So, like, for food, it's... what we have found is that you got to just make the food available. You're going to go through many meals where they're not going to touch the vegetables. Mm-hmm. But over time, what we've noticed is that the kids actually start to pick it up. And it's just because it's there, and then they're hungry, they get interested. And so you just got to make it available.
Of course, that means we're going to have to start eating like that too.
So. Right, yeah. Absolutely.
Which is a struggle.
So let's talk about, for anyone who's listening, perspective of foster parents. There's a big misconception about... things that kind of deter people from even applying to become foster parents, like it's too expensive, have to pay all these legal fees, hire a high-powered attorneys, and not just with gay and lesbian couples, just anybody. And I have to be like this perfect parent. Nothing can be on my record. I'm not just talking about legal criminal records, just like anything. Like, I don't know, I took a pill for depression once. I've heard that. And another state can keep you from being able to be a foster parent. Are those things true?
Those are all questions that we ask. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that disqualifies you.
Gotcha.
There are things, steps we have to go through. But one thing, I have had parents come to me before and say, you know, I've dealt with depression. I had this bout. What I tell all of our prospective parents is, your experiences in life prepare you to be a foster parent. It is important. It is very important to be able to empathize with these children and to have some understanding of how they're feeling. Your losses, how you've dealt with your losses, how you handled those, help that child through their loss, because they have lost everything when they come into foster care. So those things are checked. They don't disqualify you. I believe that the majority of our parents, there are times where you're going to encounter maybe an attorney or a CPS worker who may show some bias against you, but I don't think that is the overwhelming experience.
Okay. I was going to say, that has never been our experience with all of the cases that we have had. We've never run into a single person.
It's rare. It's so rare, then that's all we talk about. Like, why do they think that? Why are they acting that way? And we went to solve it. We went to fix that relationship.
And I would think the place that you might run into some odd things outside of Dallas County, some judges, because judges are elected. So you have judges who have an ideology rather than really caring about what's best for the kid.
We haven't ever had a judge who would say order the child removed from that particular
foster home.
From a
gay or lesbian home.
We have not encountered that. That is not to say it has not occurred. I don't know. But we as an agency have not. There are... you know, times you may have a jury, like if you're talking about a termination trial, you might worry about some juries in some counties. Mm-hmm. But even that is progressing.
You know, don't you think most juries, when they hear the story, they're more outraged by the kid who was abused than they are about the two guys or the trans woman
I think
who
that
wants
now.
To take this
yes.
kid.
Yes, I agree. Now. Yeah.
Now. Even yeah. a few years ago, depending on mm-hmm. the county. Mm-hmm. But yes, now. I think that.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say cost, too.
Yes.
There is no cost that you pay to us. Mm-hmm. You have to be CPR and first aid certifying, mm-hmm. so there's a cost to that. There are changes you have to make to your home, like we talked about. So there may be some startup cost there. There mm-hmm. may be some mm-hmm. cost for the inspections. But as far as the agency, there's no cost.
And what about if it gets to the point where...
For adoption,
you have to file for fees with the court.
It depends on if it's a subsidized adoption. So in Texas, mm-hmm. like a sibling group, mm-hmm. that is a subsidized adoption. So the legal fees are paid by the state. The attorney fees are paid.
Okay.
And that is for, trying to think of my ages. A minority child, mm-hmm. 2 and over, is mm-hmm. a subsidized adoption.
Okay.
And a Caucasian child, it's 6 and up. Okay. But all sibling groups, no matter of the age, are a subsidized adoption. So there are no legal costs there.
And the reason for older children, they're just simply harder to place?
Exactly.
Same thing with children of color?
Yes.
Harder to place?
Yes.
So from a financial aspect of having gone through a lot of this, mm-hmm. Where you have most of the impact is just when you receive a child coming into your care. Many times you don't know the age, you don't know necessarily the sex. They typically come in with nothing. And so just the preparation for, you know, if you get a baby that needs a crib, well, now you need to go find a crib. Now you need to go find
That's
baby
true.
Clothes. Now you need to go find other things. If it's an older child, you need to find shoes and pants and shirts and things like that.
And if you're a gay couple, then everything has to match perfectly.
So many times the biggest cost that we felt was the immediate placement of the child. We've done both where we had a child that we adopted that was not considered, did not get the legal fees paid for, the subsidy, mm-hmm. and then the other ones did. But, you know, for us, it just depends on your own situation and things like that.
Okay, so you buy the kid some clothes, some basic things that he or she needs. Once the child in a foster that is being taken from you, do you send the kid home with those clothes so that they have something?
It's their stuff. We would not. I mean, toys, hair, barrettes, everything.
You bought that for that kid.
Yeah, it's theirs.
Yeah,
exactly. We would not keep
and
that.
And there are some things, you know, things that you might use over and over again. Like, you're not going to send the crib. But our families typically send that with the child. One, it is the child's. But two, you want that to be an easy transition mm-hmm. for that child
sure.
and those parents. So to try to set them up for success.
Now,
that's a really good point. I'm sorry. When it's one of our jobs with all the foster kids that have left, we would really work to prepare the child to make that move because it was just so important for us that it was smooth because we don't want to damage that child even more than what they've already gone through. So,
because by that point, if it's a young enough child, they've been away from their mother for 3 months, let's say. Well, that's traumatic, or 12 or whatever. That's traumatic going back to that parent. If the child is going back at the end of the year, and you know this halfway into the foster process, are there visitation days to smooth this out?
Every child has weekly visitation with their parents throughout the case.
Okay, so how difficult is that for you as the foster parent?
It depends on the child. So visitations can go good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
Some kids visit well with their parents, and it's a really positive experience. There were some that maybe not so positive.
Mm-hmm.
It really depends on the kid's situation and how they interacted with the parents in the first place. We have had the instance where a child was removed or went back with family, but didn't go back with the parent, but went back with family members. So the child didn't know the family members, and so there was actually probably a 1 month two-month transition plan where almost it started off with would go visit for one day, and then it turned into weekends. And then, you know, just as the time went on, it turned more and more that the child was spending more time with the family, so it made it easier for the transition. The hard part was trying to coordinate schedules, you know, mm-hmm. when would we receive the child back, you know, things like that. So we would, at the end, we'd have her from Monday through Friday morning, and then she would go Friday evening through Sunday. So it's just kind of more of trying to coordinate the schedules and things like that. But mm-hmm. in general, most times, the transitions over time worked out.
Because I could see that being very traumatic, taken out of the parents' home, now they're in your home, taken out of your home, going to, back to other relatives. Those relatives don't mean anything to her. You can't explain, oh, well, it's your mother's sister's, you know.
How do you
connect? What does the kid know?
I mean, that's part of the problem is how do you connect? And as foster parents, that's what we took very seriously.
Is that child doing well that you know?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, good.
So
okay.
That child, we actually, the grandmother keeps us in contact.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's nice.
We get to see her several times a year, and it is awesome.
We go to birthday parties.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We had her as an infant. And for a year, and more than a year, and so it was very difficult to let her go. But then the grandmother was, you know, who has her, is very supportive of us being in contact. So sends pictures almost on a monthly basis, and then via text, and then we get to see them all the time.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
We need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about tell me your experience, what it was like to adopt your first child.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis. We're talking to Brian and Cisco. They are adoptive parents. They have three kids that they've adopted so far. They fostered four others, and so they figure they're good for another 12 or so.
All right.
I was going to say, is this are we going on for a gay Brady Bunch here?
Yeah. I don't know.
You're slaying these three girls.
They really don't want us to say the gay Duggars, but no, they're not at all. They're not at all.
No, Brady Bunch.
Talking to Jennifer Maddox. She's the assistant director for foster care and adoption at Jonathan's Place, which is in Garland. And it's the first foster and adoption program in Texas that was honored by Human Rights Campaign for being a
all children, all families.
Thank you. All children, all families, meaning they want the best parents no matter who
right,
they are.
Right.
Okay, so Josh, we were talking during the break. Josh had a question, and what he was asking is, how do I know whether or not, you know, I'm thinking about it, but how do I know if I'm even asking the question, is that saying, you know, probably not.
So I think a lot of it is up to the individual, and you never know until you try.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are really interested in pursuing having children and going through CPS or looking at the opportunity to do so, you'll never know unless you try. But, I mean, there's not really a way for you to know.
And from the agency perspective, from my perspective, we have orientations monthly. And so if you're thinking, maybe I want to do this, maybe I don't, come to an orientation.
So orientation doesn't mean it's the beginning of the program. It just means we're telling you about the program.
Yes, yeah. I'm coming here to get more information. And during orientation, I talk about the foster to adopt process, all of the training requirements, the documentation requirements, and answering any questions you have about, you know, ma'am, I'm wavering, I'm not sure. There's no commitment there.
Right.
And there's no commitment all the way through the
Absolutely.
9 months. I mean, you know, it's you're bringing a child into your home. And if you decide at some point that this is just not going to be the option for me, you can certainly back out. And there's no repercussions
well,
for that.
Well, and stuff happens in people's lives that
Absolutely.
It looked
right.
like it was going to be good. Just lost this job, and I'm
right.
not in a position
and
right
ha-
now.
And we have that happen.
Sure.
People may be – they may start the training. The first training is a two-day training. It's called PRIDE, but it stands for Parent Resource for Information Development and Education. That's a Saturday and a Sunday. And people may attend those 2 days and think, this is not at all what I expected it to be. or they may be in the middle of the process and something does happen in their life and they need to take a break. So then you come back and you start again.
Or you can be licensed and not be ready to take your first placement. And you can put it on hold, your licensing.
Yes, and so Brian and Cisco, for example, are licensed foster parents, but they are what we call inactive, meaning they still have their license, but they are not at this moment accepting placements. They don't have to keep up with all of their trainings. They don't have to keep up with their inspections. They could, if they wanted, have
because
their medications.
There's ongoing training and ongoing inspections.
Yearly training requirements. Yeah.
And when you say they're inactive, she's really not insulting you guys. She's not saying you have nothing to do. You have three kids. They are all toddlers.
Tell me about it. Right. You know, I often mention, you know, it's just a given. One of my greatest days ever is the day my daughter was born. So I would assume that it was just a magnificent day, the day that you all permanently became parents of your little boys.
Can you talk
about those days?
Yeah, they were ours. They were no longer foster parents.
Right.
And, you know, being part of, we talked all hour about being foster parents. They are not our kids. Mm-hmm. You know, we are there to provide a safe place for that kid at that moment. And then when it actually happened, I bawled like a baby, which is just very typical of me. But, you know, it was a very emotional moment. And it was took my breath away when the judge said that it was done. So it was very emotional.
So one thing that I just wanted to highlight was for me, it's a little different because the first child that we adopt was an emergency placement.
Mm-hmm.
Came in, started right out of being pulled from the parents, emergency placement. So the once the child was pulled, you had to go through the entire process. They actually extended the case for the additional 6 months. And so we were in a limbo there of where we're going to get to adopt this child or not. So we went through an emotional roller coaster with this child, not knowing if we would ever adopt or not. The second group, the two other children that we did adopt, they were considered legal risk, already considered basically adoptable. So we were selected through an interview process, which included CPS and the ad litems and different groups, and actually the aunts as well. They attended the interview. We were selected to be the adopted parents. So
family actually participated.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just real quick, emergency placement means that they were just there was an emergency to where that child had to be pulled from the home at that very moment and then placed into a foster home hours later. So it was midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning when they brought this 5-month-old baby boy to our home. So that emergency means that it's just immediate and just got pulled. So there's a whole process that they have to go through.
And you know nothing really about that child
until they show up.
Yeah, until they show up. All you know is, we think it's about he's about this age, it's a boy, and maybe this ethnicity, but really we don't know anything else, whereas the legal risk, they have notes and kind of pictures and backgrounds of this child. So it's kind of it's a little bit different in the two different types of kids that you would possibly get.
Mm-hmm. So what has life been like of
chaos.
as two daddies of three little boys in Plano?
So it has been wonderful, actually. We attend an amazing daycare. Well, it's a school, and so it's with a Methodist church. They've been amazing. The administration has been amazing. They actually attended all of the adoptions.
Oh, that is awesome.
With the support we have from our church, St. Stephen's United Methodist out in Mesquite, Texas, we threw a big party the day after the adoption of the second two siblings, and so when all three were done, threw a big party, had a huge turnout. We, you know, just everyone came and celebrated and enjoyed the life moment. You know, it's just, you just live your day,
you guys
amazing.
Are throwing wrenches all into the Texas stereotypes, and that's good. I mean, that is so awesome to hear. Your church was involved, the community. That's the way it should be.
The
you
whole
know?
Church service
Absolutely.
Was around
that is
the boys. I mean, really, it was all about the adoption and the celebration.
Right.
You know, and I my daughter, before she... When she got to the appropriate age that we thought she needed to go to daycare, we interviewed like three different daycares. You know, and that's something you have to be aware of. Like, you know, okay, are they going to be cool with this? So we were very upfront about that. Well, what was the response with you all?
So this school has been supportive through the entire foster care process. So every time we got a foster care, if there was room, and oftentimes they just made room, mm-hmm. and we could bring the foster kid into that school. So, I mean, you think about it. When you get a call at 12 o'clock at night and you've got to work, and what are you going to do? And usually the first day is just trying to figure all those out. Mm-hmm. But they were always really open, and only one time they were unable to make room for one of the kids.
So you've already built like a relationship with Jonathan's place school.
No. We reached out. So through our church, we had friends who were teachers in Plano ISD, and we started, you know, as we were getting through the prep process, looking for
children in foster care. Mm-hmm. Can possibly receive a daycare subsidy. Yeah. And so that also limits your options. Not only they had to find a daycare who accepted this, it's called CCMS, mm-hmm. But then to find what you're referring to, a welcoming daycare.
Right. So this daycare hadn't taken CCMS, this subsidy, but it's not just for foster care. It's for other parents who are having, you know, struggles in life. Mm-hmm. And so they opened up their program to CCMS when we approached them to say, hey, can we, you know, bring our kid to your program? And so it's a school, and they were absolutely embracive of who we were. When we first called them and asked them, because we had gotten so many referrals, when we asked them, they just said, what is that? That has no. We don't care. You know, bring them in.
Yeah.
You know, so it's always been about the kids,
and that's the way it should be. But you have to check. You have to check.
And one thing to highlight, when you asked about the cost and mm-hmm. the initial cost of receiving a child, for the first 6 weeks to 2 months, you would have to plan to be able to pay a daycare for that child. So
gotcha.
If you get CCMS, that doesn't come immediately. It's something that comes a little bit later, and you don't get reimbursed. So that's kind
gotcha.
Of
awesome.
Oh, okay. It's not 6 weeks pays for that first week. It's that sixth week pays for that sixth week.
Starts the day.
So you have
whenever it starts.
The day it's approved is when it begins.
There is cost associated with mm-hmm. having the kids. That,
sure.
that is absolutely true. So
yeah, you know another cost? College.
So.
But there is this one I do know.
There is a program.
If it is a subsidized adoption.
Not only non, it's also non-subsidized.
That's true. It's if a child is adopted through foster care.
Right.
In the state of
they
Texas.
They have a tuition waiver.
For any public university.
Public university, yes. Not TCU like right. Cisco.
Right. But, the thing with that is it's a program that is approved by the legislature yearly. Mm-hmm. So it's never a guarantee it's always going to be there.
Why? The Texas legislature is very stable.
Right.
Made up of a bunch of people.
But, I mean, politically, I mean, how would that look if they pull that type of a program away?
Right.
You know, that wouldn't look very good politically. But
have you met some people in the Texas legislature?
Just
you
saying.
Think they care?
But it is something that you can do. The children would be able to get basically pay for an in-state tuition at any public school through their doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
So if they choose to go do so. They have to do it before they're 25, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's not just bachelor's if they want to continue.
That is awesome.
It's just a way to break the system, the cycle of foster care, because oftentimes you're in foster care and then the parents are you find that the parents were in foster care of these kids. So it's just, mm-hmm. you know, generation after generation comes right back to foster care. And so, you know, I know the state is looking to break that cycle, you know, and education is one piece. So besides a stable, loving home.
So yeah, that part's important.
So are you guys done or, I mean, any more possible?
You could never say done. You know, we always keep it open. You know, life can take many different routes and you can make many different decisions in the future. And so if we were done, we probably would have just said close us down as a foster home.
That's true. Good
and
point.
Someday Jennifer's just going to be thinking, we have this emergency placement. We have to put this kid somewhere and we don't have somebody.
I've been waiting for that call. And we've told her not to do that, but it wouldn't surprise me if that happened.
And you do make questionable decisions at 3 in the morning. So
Well, that's why I'm saying particularly emergency placement. 3 in the morning, you know, just she's 6 months old. You always wanted a little girl in your I could feel free.
Yeah. Yeah, but we do try to be respectful of our parents' choices. You know, they do deserve the time to spend time just as their newly formed family. Mm-hmm. And the same with when you have placements, a foster placement leave. That's you need some time to grieve that loss, and we want to allow our families the time to do that.
Yeah. How did you get over grieving your loss when you lost those kids?
You never do. Okay. I mean, that's just. I mean, it's something that you always think about.
I would think one way with the one child you're in touch with. That's one way.
That's one way, and it's still hard to leave. You know, I want to take her with me. You know, but I mean, she's clearly loved. She is clearly cared for, and has a great relationship with her family now. You know, but that little part of me says, "Oh, come on, you're so cute." And the others, you just think about all the time. You wonder how they're doing, and you know.
And is that one thing that you don't have a right to find out how that child
is
doing?
We generally don't know. We typically don't get any additional information once the
because
child goes home.
Because one thing I've heard from some foster parents is, I just want to send the kid a present on her birthday.
Yep.
You know, and you can't do that, can you?
No.
Yeah, once the child goes home.
And every situation is different. I mean, the first two kids we don't know anything about. One of the kids went to New York. We don't know anything about that one. The little girl, we've been in touch with that family, and it's been amazing. And then two of the boys that we've adopted, we've kind of grown to know their aunts like our own family. And so we spend holidays together. They're watching the kids now, you know. So it's
at this moment.
At this moment. So it just depends on the situation, and no one's experience has been the same. And
yeah,
and
call to CPS. Some adoptive parents just abandoned their kids with the with the family that we had to take the kids from.
No,
that didn't happen.
No, that didn't happen.
This is family who took the kids.
This is the family that took care of the children, and then we're in the interview and selected us.
Right.
So
yeah, that's awesome.
We love
okay,
them,
so
yeah.
if somebody is interested. They can just call you and arrange when they'll come to an orientation. But you have one coming up.
We hold orientations the second Tuesday of every month. So our next one is April 12th. They are from 6:30 to 7:30. I try to keep it within an hour. And like you said, we're in Garland. They can call me.
It's right off of I-30.
I-30
at LBJ.
Or Broadway, that intersection,
Okay, so they should call you first, not just show up.
It's best to call me because we are kind of hard to find, just because not on any of our buildings does it say Jonathan's Place. So, and our address is Duck Creek, but the entrance is on Greenbelt Parkway. So, yes, call me.
Call for directions, call for... Get a couple of quickie questions
just
answered.
So I can do a little inquiry.
And you're really encouraging somebody who, like Josh said, is kind of thinking of it, but if I'm thinking about it too hard, does that mean not me?
I don't think so at all.
I think it's, you're scared because...
It's the unknown.
Right, and you don't know if I can be a good parent. I don't know. You know, we are all human, and we want to care for these children who have had, are in an unfortunate situation.
Right.
And as long as you are able to do that, we can all make mistakes. We can, and we always will because we're human. So this isn't about being perfect. This is about providing a safe place for a child.
In every orientation, I say, you will make mistakes. That's okay. That's how we learn. That's how we do better the next time. And we are there to support you through that mistake.
And we need to go. Jennifer Maddox from Jonathan's Place, thank you very much. Brian and Cisco, good luck with
your
growing family.
You're welcome.
We'll be back next week with more Lambda Weekly.